All right, Dave, so let's hear about your top 10 favorite science books of 2017.
Well, one caveat, Nolan, is, you know, they're the ones I've read. So there are probably some out there that some listeners may have run into that they like even better, but here are mine. So coming in at number 10 was Making Contact, which was by Sarah Scholes, about Jill Tarter and the search for extraterrestrial intelligence. She was also a guest on the show, and I really enjoyed that interview and learning about the life of the scientist and human being, Jill Tarter. And of course, that's a Northern California story. The Allen Telescope Array is only about an hour and 15 minutes away from my home. So I really enjoyed that one.
And she was the inspiration for the character in the movie Contact. Is that right?
That's right. Ellie Arroway. She was partially the inspiration for that. That's for sure.
And what was your next favorite book of 2017?
Yeah, coming in at number 9 was Darwin's First Theory by Rob Wesson. And it's him retracing Darwin's journeys on the Beagle and other places where he was learning about geology. We always think about Darwin in terms of his theory of natural selection and evolution. But this is more about him learning about geology. And he almost stumbled onto an understanding of plate tectonics. Not quite, but he came very close. And I found that to be very interesting, coupled with Rob's visits to Chile after trying to recount the earthquakes that Darwin had experienced in 1838, I think it was, and then in 2014, you know, experiencing the same type of earthquakes in Chile. He went and retraced all that. So that was really interesting.
And coming in on your next one, it's another famous science communicator, Neil deGrasse Tyson. What can you tell us about this book?
Yes, the big guy, Neil. There's nobody more famous when it comes to science communication in the United States than Neil deGrasse Tyson and his Astrophysics for People in a Hurry. This one was a fun read about lots of interesting things like dark matter and dark energy and the Big Bang and things that people have heard of but maybe don't quite understand. And Neil, in his typical breezy style, very entertaining, you know, gives you an overview of what those things really are. So if somebody's talking about them at a party, you might be able to intelligently respond to them. Unless they're an actual astrophysicist, then you might want to just listen.
But I'm sure they'd be pretty excited just to have somebody interested to talk to them about astrophysics.
Yeah. It's not like you would, you know, totally understand all of these things, but at least you'd have a grasp of, you know, what they are and what they're about and how much we don't know about those things. And it's a fun book to read. And like it said, it's for people in a hurry, so it doesn't take long to read. It's a pretty slim volume.
And coming in at number 7, A Hole in the Wind. What can you tell us about this book?
Yeah, that's by David Goodrich. He's a climate scientist for the United Nations, and he was a guest on our program. He took a, after he retired, he took a bike ride across the United States to try to see firsthand the effects of climate change here in our country and talk to normal people and see what their understanding or lack thereof was about climate change. And it's fun to read because I just love road trip kind of stories. And, you know, a guy riding his bicycle across the country from east to west, from the East Coast to Oregon is where he wound up, it's definitely a road trip kind of thing. And he ran into just the most amazing people along the way. And a lot of them just had no belief that climate change was a really big problem, but they were always willing to listen to him and help him out along the way, you know, just really kind, generous people. And so it was a wonderful story, a wonderful book.
And, of course, the big event of 2017 was the Great American Eclipse. What was your favorite book about that this year?
Well, there were a lot of good ones, but I think the best one was American Eclipse by David Baron. And it tells the story of the world's fascination with total eclipses of the sun and the Great American Eclipse that happened in 1878 and kind of comparing it to the one we had this year. And it has three unlikely characters in it. Thomas Edison, the inventor, and he's ready to test out an invention on his eclipse expedition. And Mariah Mitchell, the president of the Association for the Advancement of Women in Science. She's like a famous astronomer. And at that time, you know, women astronomers were few and far between. And a cosmologist named James Craig Watson. And all these stories, these people are headed to Wyoming from the East Coast a couple of years after the Little Bighorn had happened. So the Indian Wars were still really fresh, and the West was the Wild West. And here they're taking American science out there to the Wild West to observe this eclipse and kind of put United States on the map as a nation of scientists for the first time. And it's just a really epic, wonderful story.
And now we're moving into the, so that was number six, the American eclipse. But now we're moving into the top five. You know, we've talked about eclipses, we've talked about astrophysics, but we haven't talked about earthquakes yet. So what's this next book all about?
Well, there was a little bit of earthquake action in Darwin's First Theory, but one of the best books I read, and I would say that, you know, the top five are interchangeable. They're all wonderful books. The Great Quake by Henry Fountain from the New York Times. He's their science writer. It's just this amazing story of the Great Alaskan Earthquake and the people that experienced it and how traumatic it was. This was one of the greatest earthquakes in the history of the Earth and our study of it. And it led to a revolution of our understanding of plate tectonics and these giant subduction zone earthquakes, like what happened in Japan in 2011 that caused tsunami. And, you know, at that time, Alaska was really had a small population. And so, it was the frontier, like, in the Wild West, the Alaska in the 60s was the frontier. And his stories about the native peoples, the indigenous peoples and what they experienced, some of them very tragic, just amazing how huge that earthquake was and the deformation of the land were places where the sea was dropping 20 feet or places where the land was being uplifted or places where the sea rose. And all of this mystery was being unraveled by a scientist, a geologist by the name of George Plafker. His study of that earthquake really led to the confirmation of plate tectonics as a really bona fide theory and put him as one of the great heroes of modern geology. It's just a great story.
And coming in at number four, another book about quakes.
Yeah, Quakeland by Catherine Miles is a perfect book to read right after or right before the Great Quake. Hers is a kind of a road trip across the United States. It starts out with the Hebgen earthquake in the Yellowstone region in 1959, which is kind of a little known story, but very tragic. A lot of people were killed by a massive landslide there. And she goes all over the United States in these unlikely places where you don't think of earthquakes as happening on the East Coast. But in Missouri, there was a huge earthquake in 1811 and 1812. And she goes down in the deepest mine in North America. And that's kind of a scary, interesting part. And into the bowels of the Hoover Dam, investigating what would happen if an earthquake happened there. And the big takeaway I had from this book was it was really fun to read and funny at times. And she's good company as you're going along with her on this road trip, was that we don't understand hardly at all what the earth is like beneath our feet. The processes happening miles and miles below us are so poorly understood. Earthquakes are still one of the great mysteries of science.
Well, we've made it to the top three. What's coming in at number three in your list here?
Probably the scariest book I read is called The Water Will Come by Jeff Goodell. And it's about sea level rise and the inevitability of what's going to happen. No matter what we do about climate change, we've already set in motion the warming of this planet that will cause sea level rise. And we're observing it in places now like Miami in the east coast of the United States and small islands in the Pacific. And he paints a picture of the future that's at times, you know, either you could take it to the point of being grim or just startling. And it's one of those things where people don't think about it, but 50 years from now, we're going to be dealing with refugees from sea level rise that's going to make, you know, the wars in Syria and places like that and the refugee problems we're having with that look just like a blip. And so that was a very sobering read, really well told. He's a writer for the Rolling Stone magazine, and just a great writer, great researcher, and good storyteller. And I highly recommend it, especially for people that are kind of skeptical about climate change. Read The Water Will Come, and then you will start to get a sense of, you know, it doesn't matter where you live, the sea level rise affecting coastal areas is going to affect the entire planet.
Well, you mentioned what sea levels will look like 50 years in the future, but our next book takes us 50 years in the past, in 1968. What can you tell us about this book?
This was my favorite book. Just personally, I love this book, 1968 by Jeffrey Kluger from Time Magazine. It's the story of Apollo 8 at Christmas time, the first mission that actually left Earth orbit and went out to the moon. They orbited the moon on Christmas Eve, had this dramatic television broadcast where they read from Genesis and showed what the Earth looked like. They took the amazing Earthrise photograph that became an iconic part of the environmental movement in the 70s and kind of got the impetus behind Earth Day. The story, though, that the real takeaway for me for this is the grit of those crew members, the three men, Frank Borman, William Anders, and Jim Lovell. And they're still alive. They're still the only astronauts married to their original spouses. You know, they're called the Original Wives Club. The divorce rate among the Apollo astronauts was sky high. No pun intended, but there it is. But these guys are still, and Frank Borman, when I was talking to Jeffrey on the phone one day, he's still flying spotting flights for firefighters in Montana. This guy's up in his 80s and still flying for his country and for public service. It's just an amazing story. And the thing I'd like to tell you about this one is I gave this book to some friends who were just like, yeah, not interested in the space program. I said, I don't care if you're interested, just read the book and tell me if you like it. Both of them just said this is one of the best books they ever read and were just really inspired by it. So it doesn't matter if you're interested in space flight or not. It's just an epic story and it's really well told.
And the number one book of the year,
Leonardo, Leonardo da Vinci by Walter Isaacson is just an amazing book, an amazing story about probably one of the greatest geniuses of all time. You know, when you think genius, what comes to your mind when you hear the word genius? What person?
Bill Murray.
Okay. Yes, because you like comedy. So I'd agree with that. What about Bob is definitely a true work of genius. But, you know, usually when most people hear the word genius, what picture pops in their heads?
When most people think, they probably think Einstein.
Yeah, Einstein. And I would say that after you read Leonardo da Vinci, you see the similarities and differences, because, you know, Einstein was brilliant at using his imagination to solve problems and come up with these incredible theories about how the universe works. Leonardo was just this amazingly curious person. His genius lie in his absolute unfathomable curiosity about everything. And so, you know, he only painted 20 some odd paintings because he could never finish any of the other ones because he was just such a perfectionist. But he was always going off and investigating something else, dissecting human cadavers when that was totally, you know, illegal, doing it secretly so that he could understand the structure of the muscles behind the face. And that's what gets you the great Mona Lisa and how fantastic that and realistic realistic that painting is. His life is just, it's like a movie, and guess what? It's going to be turned into a movie. I even heard that Leonardo DiCaprio may be playing the title role, which is kind of appropriate. This is a book I'm getting for friends and family for Christmas. If you like art, you love it. If you like science, you'll love it. If you like nature, you'll love it. If you're just interested in, you know, human curiosity, you'll love it. And it's also a great history story. You know, it has run-ins with people like Machiavelli and Michelangelo. And Walter Isaacson's just a masterful storyteller. So you couple his ability with the epic story of Leonardo. It's an absolute gem, and highly recommended.